Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
There will not be a repeat winner of the Grey Cup for 2019. The Calgary Stampeders from 2018 will not win the Grey Cup in 19. I guarantee that. Well, it's because every team is different. So if the Stamps win, it's not going to be the same Stamps team because, like Mark Trestman always told us, you're never the same team the next year. So nobody can repeat. Marsh, do you agree with that? Especially because this is the week, draft week, the 2019 CFL draft coming up, and the teams will look a whole lot different after this week.
Yeah, for sure. This is one of the fun parts of the season that I think is extremely underrated, Davis, because we get an opportunity to be able to see what guys are going to look like moving forward in groups and in different packages and whatnot, and your imagination starts to dance as to who could play with each other with national players that have come from years past and the guys that come from this year's draft and all of that. We piece it together, and boom, we get a random group of players, and all of a sudden they're Grey Cup champions.
And Marsh, other than you being the draft guru at CFL.ca, we're noticing we're missing somebody here on the pod. My co-host, Donovan Bennett, and I think we both like to give a big congratulations to DJ and his lovely wife, Kate. They welcomed in their baby boy, their firstborn, Desmond Timothy Bennett, this week. So congrats to DJ and Kate. We've given him a week off of the Waggle to enjoy time with his family. And, I think that goes without saying. All of us at CFL.ca and the crew wishes them love and congratulations.
I would, I'd love to give a huge congratulations to DJ for doing this, because the only thing I birthed this week, Davis, was a mock draft, and that is significantly less important than what he has accomplished. But the real hero we all know is Kate. Like, let's be real about this. DJ is just getting a week off for fun, but you know how that is.
DJ's always been just a sideshow to Kate anyway. But anyway, congrats to the whole family. Yeah. They seem pretty excited and happy. And don't downplay what you've birthed, because you have been an absolute monster, just dominating the content at .ca. You've come out with the biggest thing now. You had your top 50 that you put out last week, and now you come out today, just dropped today, and that's your mock draft, Martian. Let's get right to it. That's everyone wants to talk about the Argos with their first pick, because they really decide what happens from then on. Who do you got with the Argos with their first pick in your mock draft, Marsh?
With the first overall selection, the Toronto
Argonauts. Time out. You're not the commissioner.
The presentation of the commissioner. I'm always jealous of the commissioners, and they get to walk up and do the. The nice thing is Ambrosi doesn't get booed like the NFL commissioner too, Roger Goodell. So
another quick one too before we go into the pick. Is it not awkward that at the NFL draft that everyone had to give Goodell the big dap and the hug every time? It just feels weird. It's awkward, is it not, a little bit?
You know what I would love to have, though, with the CFL draft is if we could get the top guys that we know are likely to go in the top picks or that are likely to go in the top 20. Let's get a green room. Like, they don't necessarily have to dap up, the commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, or anything. But I just think having those guys there in person, being able to interview them in person, put the draft cap on in person, all of that, I think that's actually kind of a nice little aspect that could be added. But, yeah, the whole coming up with a handshake with the commissioner the day before is usually a little shaky. But let's move on to the top pick here. I've been a fan of him ever since the Combine, really. That's when he opened my eyes. And I think you and I talk about this all the time at the Combine, Davis, which is the Combine is not necessarily a confirmation of what a player is at any position, but it's more of the idea of seeing somebody and either thinking, okay, yeah, I need to go back and watch more game film on them, or, yeah, that person's definitely not who I thought they were, and I need to completely revamp my assessment of them. For me, going into this draft, I knew Drew Desjarlais was a good offensive lineman, but I thought he was a middle-of-the-road guy. He blew me away at the National Combine with his athletic testing, and I went back and had to watch more of him. I don't know for sure he's going to be the top pick. This isn't a Faith Akakiti situation when Winnipeg had that a couple years ago, or Mark Chapman even last year where it came out from Dwayne Ford that you were going to end up having the Ticats take that receiver from Central Michigan, Mark Chapman, first overall. There's nothing set in stone about this. But to me, if you're the Argonauts, why not just go with something that is concrete right now? They drafted Ryan Hunter last year from Bowling Green. He spent the season in Kansas City. He recently signed with the Chiefs as well. He seems like he's going to stick there in the NFL. I think if you're the Argos at one overall, you're looking for something that you can plug and play sooner rather than later. Might not be week one, might not need to be week one, but somebody that you can actually use moving forward. And I think that Drew Desjarlais has got athleticism. He's got really good hand placement. He's got all the little things that you want from an offensive lineman in terms of his feet, his movement ability, all that stuff. And so I think he's a threat for the top pick. So I threw him to the Argos at first overall.
How many teams, how many different guys in this with this number one pick do you think teams would have slotted at one? How many different guys at the nine teams? How many different guys you think they're slotted at one right now? Because it's not like the NFL draft, like you said, or not like last year where we all thought it was Chapman. I got five guys that I could take at number one right now.
Yeah, and this is what I find so great about the CFL draft is everybody has different needs, and because the ratio is what's being drafted here, right? It's only national players, so you're looking at how your team uses nationals and where you think you could get the biggest upgrade when it comes to having a national on your roster. Like, there's a reason why the Ticats drafted Mark Chapman last year and traded up to be able to go get him with the first overall pick. It's because Andy Fantuzzo's on the way out, and they looked at their receiving group, and they were like, okay, we've got Shamau Chambers in-house, but, you know, we're going to see what he's going to do moving forward. We've got Mike Jones, but maybe we can upgrade at this spot because we drafted Mike Jones back in 2016 or 17. And so they looked around, they're like, you know what, Mark Chapman is an upgrade. Let's go get him right now. That would have been completely different for Montreal because it's very obvious that Montreal would never have traded out of the top spot if they valued Mark Chapman the same way the Ticats did. It's obvious that the Alouettes were more interested in Trey Rutherford. They would have taken him first overall. But hey, if they can get some draft capital, move out of that top spot, still get the player they want, and have future draft picks, that's a good move by Montreal. So to answer your question, I don't even think the number is nine. I think it's more than nine. Like, I think
you think there's more than nine guys right now that could potentially be a one.
But I'm just saying, in terms of if a team that is anywhere from that five to nine spot. So looking at the draft this year, Winnipeg's got the five spot, then Saskatchewan, Ottawa, and then Calgary. Those last four teams, they don't really have to do the brain, dancing or the mock drafting inside their own building of figuring out who would we take with the top pick. But I think legitimately, if they were asked to do that on the fly, there would be a discussion inside the room. Like, let's say for some reason Toronto tomorrow calls Dave Dickinson and says, hey, do you want the top pick? Here's what we're going to ask for it. And it's not that much. And Dave Dickinson goes, oh, you know what? Sure, why not? Why don't we go get it? If he gets that, there's going to be a discussion inside that Calgary Stampeders war room where they're going to say, let's go and get an offensive lineman. There's somebody big, athletic. Maybe let's go with an American guy. Maybe we take a defensive lineman that we can wait on because we have great depth in our pass rush in a Jonathan Kongbo from Tennessee. Maybe we go receiver. Okay, and then it's all of a sudden, do you want to go Herji Mayala from UConn, an NCAA guy, or do you want to go with one of the talented nationals, maybe Kayon Julian Grant from Santa Fe? So I think it's just because there's so many differing opinions and because there's so many different perspectives on how you use your ratio in this league, I think it is more than the number of teams. I honestly do. But I think for the Argonauts, you're constantly looking to reinvest in the core of your team. And to me, the core of their team moving forward, obviously, is the offensive line. Sean McEwen is still young. They've got a great group on the offensive line right now. But if you can back that up with a future to kind of pair with what you already have in house, I think that's never a bad thing. And that's why I went with offensive line. And that's why I went with a young, athletic offensive lineman out of Windsor that's also a regional guy, keep in mind. So he's not going to want to escape when it comes to all things free agency in a couple of years.
When you put this together, Marsh, to follow up on what you just said, were you looking at best players available? Were you looking? This was obviously a long process. You put a lot into this. Were you looking at best players available? Were you looking at the roster? I mean, obviously, there's going to be a combination of both. But was it team specific, or was there more of a percentage on the players themselves?
In all honesty, when I do this stuff, it's more of an art than a science, and it changes every minute. In all honesty, leading up to the point that I submit it, maybe because of changes in who's eligible for the draft, because we all know in the last week there's always these surprises. Like, we remember Cameron Judge a couple of years ago just popped up out of nowhere at a UCLA and all of a sudden became eligible, and bam, the Saskatchewan Roughriders take him, and he's been a good player for them. But there's always those situations. But to me, the way I put this together is kind of this delicate balance, I would say, not to make it sound like it's this intricate, special, designed way. It's more of just a feel thing. But the idea of, okay, where do they like to use their nationals? Where have they dedicated a national roster spot to? would they be willing to go outside of the framework of the Nationals that they have in their roster right now? Or do they just want to add depth to a roster spot that's already dedicated to a National in their ratio, the way that it's respective to their roster? So I do that. Then it comes down to, what do you need? Like for Montreal this year, for me, I probably drafted them more receivers than they need to actually have. But I did that with the express purpose of basically making a statement that Montreal needs excitement. Montreal needs athleticism. They need to be able to make plays down the field. And if you want to be able to make plays down the field, who better to do it with than National players that will get the fans excited as well and make the fan base reinvest in what this team is going to become down the line. So there's sometimes it's just a feel for the league, a feel for where a team is at, a feel for what they require at a certain position. And then other times it's just take the best available. And there's some points in that. For example, I would say when I was going down through my draft list and I took to Saskatchewan at number 6 overall, Kansas offensive lineman and center Alex Fontana, he might not be worthy of being the 6th pick. He might be worthy of being in the first round for the Hamilton Tiger Cats as a center to back up Mike Filer and maybe become the center of the future. But to me, when I looked at Saskatchewan, I just thought, you know what? Their offensive line could use a little bit of youth. And if you pair Darius Biladek, who we know from Bethune-Cookman a couple years ago, alongside somebody like an Alex Fontana from Kansas, that's the future of your offensive line. And so it's a little bit of all those things kind of tied together. And that's, I think, what makes putting the mock draft together fun and extremely frustrating and challenging.
If you want to excite teams, like you just mentioned about Montreal, want to bring, I think Toronto is looking to do the same thing. But if you want to excite your fan base, then why don't you just go ahead and draft the Canadian quarterback with your 5th pick? Why don't you just take Michael LeCon with your 5th pick? We'll have all of us watching, all of us intrigued, and that will probably help with your fan base in Montreal. But
Love that.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. And Michael O'Connor, we'll touch on him a little bit later. He's one of the guys that I think has the most intrigue for a number of reasons. Obviously, him being a Canadian quarterback and having, by most accounts, the skill set, regardless of what his nationality would be, to play in the CFL or even the NFL. So he's going to be interesting. But I do want to do this from you, Marsh. Let's just bust through the top 10 real fast, kind of ring these off. We got in Hamilton, you got Herjee Mayala from UConn, a receiver. Why Herjee Mayala ahead of the other receivers that Julian Grant or Dickey or McInnes? Why Mayala?
He is one of the more refined route runners. When I watch him, he's playing at UConn. He's put up a bunch of yards, touchdowns, catches. He's been targeted a ton in their offense. I think you could make the argument that Kayon Julian Grant is worthy of being in this realm. I also think you could look at somebody like Braden Lennius Dickey, depending on how you feel about his current situation, his body type, and how you use him. But I gave Hamilton a receiver and what I believe to be the best receiver in this class, for the simple fact that I think he's the most refined route runner, maybe right there alongside Curley Gittens Jr., but Herjee Mayala has some advantages on Curley Gittens Jr. that Gittens Jr. doesn't have. So if you want to try and replace the fact that you never actually saw Mark Chapman, your top overall pick last year, in black and gold, why not go receiver and try to double up? Because maybe Mark Chapman shows up to training camp this year, and all of a sudden, you're looking at a National receiver
group. That's not happening.
I'm just saying that the idea...
That ship has sailed, boss.
The idea of having guys pop out of the woodwork happens all the time, though, right? Like, where you think, okay, that's never going to happen. 2 years down the road, shows up, best shape of his life, fresh legs, all that, because he hasn't been playing. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying the idea to me is if you add a highly talented receiver, maybe you end up getting somebody like a Chapman in. If you don't, you've made up for it with essentially a similar player that you can trust moving forward as the future of your Canadian receiving position.
Number 3, you have the Edmonton Eskimos taking Matthew Betts, who I believe may be the most talented player in this draft. Why do you think Edmonton goes out? We know about his contract with the Bears. He's the one guy that has the most chance to stick around the longest in the National Football League. Why do you think Edmonton takes that risk with such a high pick at 3?
So this is twofold for me on this one, Davis. One part of it is that I think the Edmonton Eskimos can wait because they have Kwaku Boateng and they have a little bit of national pass rushing depth in behind him. Now, Kwaku Boateng is still relatively young, still relatively raw, but he's a really damn good player. And as he continues to refine, I think he'll get better and better. The reason that I say it's twofold is, one, they can afford to wait until, let's say, August if he ends up getting cut from the Bears roster. And two, if he does show up, all of a sudden you've got a crazy rotation, 1-2 punch of some of the better pass rushers we've seen in U Sports the last couple of years. And I know a lot of people will think that this is too high to take him because 3rd overall is pretty high for a guy that's a priority draft selection. But I talked to a scout at the CFL Combine who said he's essentially going to be asked to play special teams because I don't think any of us expect, especially in that Chicago defense, for him to get live reps in-game regular season anytime soon as a defensive end. Just speaking realistically, I hope all the best for Matthew Betts, sure. But I just don't think that's the expectation. And so they're bringing him in to be a special teamer. And I had somebody at the Combine tell me, there are dudes in D3 playing in the States who are maybe not as smart, maybe not as refined as a pass rusher, maybe not as much variety in what they like to do on the defensive side of the ball, but they're just taller and longer and thicker and faster and quicker because they're just pure athletes, and that's just the reality. So the basically what this person told me was if they're bringing Betts in to just be a special teamer, he can get replaced by other people who are better fit to just be a special teamer. That's why I think Betts makes his way back to the CFL, and that's why I think he's going to come in and be a very good 1-2 punch with whoever he gets paired with. But if he gets paired with Kwaku Boateng, then that's the real deal for Edmonton moving forward. You've got two young pass rushers that you can rely on for the next 5 to 10 years.
The risk you take with Matthew Betts is you can explain it. You can I think it's justified because of what he can do. If he sticks around, then yes, you lost the guy. But to me, the talent I see in his film is off the charts, and he's a guy to me. He's a game changing. He's a team changing. He's a ratio changing. He's a talent that you don't see every year. And yeah. And that to me, I think you could roll the dice not on a guy because it's not what you see. It's to your point, Marsh. It's not what you see. Physically, he does not look like anything special. He's, you know, a 6'3", 250-pound guy. He's not jacked up. He's not super fast. He's athletic, obviously. But when you turn on the tape, the way he's able to control his body, the way he's able to get off the edge, his jump, all those things to me are special, like really special. And yeah. For that reason, different than – and I say that, it's different than, let's say, Jonathan Kongbo. Okay, who is also freaky. He's freaky athletic. He plays in the SEC. He's a guy who is also going to be he could be a top pick. He could be in the top five. He could go first overall. He could be going the third round. It really depends on what people think about his injury and how that all plays out. But he's a once a draft type of talent. But the difference is Kongbo's comes from his physical attributes that he's a 6'5" and 270 and strong as a bull. Yeah. And you're gonna have there's gonna be guys like him that come through every couple of years with that skill set, but you don't know how that's gonna translate necessarily to the CFL game. I don't think anybody who's evaluating talent is gonna look at Matthew Betts and think that his game film is not gonna fit at the CIS, at the CFL level, and it's not gonna transfer. It's going to, just because he's plain and simply a gamer. And I think that's why Betts is a one guy that, regardless if he signs, you gotta roll the dice high. You can roll the dice with him. And I think, obviously, if he gets to Ottawa, it's a no-brainer that they'll draft him. I don't think, to your point, I don't think that he'll last that long in the draft. But other teams might be skeptical because of your point, him sticking around and losing a pick. If he gets the Red Blacks, a French-speaking the guy from Laval to play at Ottawa, he's going to be a crowd favorite. There's no way he gets past the Red Blacks. Winnipeg, you got Zach Wilkinson from Northern Colorado, the offensive lineman, and the second Winnipeg pick, Kion Julian Grant, the receiver from St. FX, going. Winnipeg has the fourth and the fifth picks in the draft in the first round. Saskatchewan, Alex Fontana, the offensive lineman from Kansas. Now, he is a center only. That's the book on him. At seven, Jesse Gibbon, the offensive lineman from Waterloo. At eight, Calgary Stampeders, you have them taking the tackle, Kyle Saxlid from UNLV. And that is the end of the 9-team first rounds with 8 picks. Explain that one, Marsh.
Yeah, that's Montreal deciding to go get themselves what I think is actually pretty smart. Sometimes when you end up losing a draft pick in the first round, you say, what a disaster. Well, they did it through the supplemental draft where they got Tyler Johnstone from the University of Oregon. And he is every bit, to me, a first-round draft pick. If he were in the draft this year, he would be worthy of a first round grade, maybe early second.
He would be the first offensive lineman taken in the draft. He was two-time exactly. All-Pac-12 offensive tackle. I mean, he's a guy that's worthy.
He's an Oregon guy. I might be
a little biased, but if you're a two-time, I don't see any other offensive lineman in this draft with those type of honors coming out. So and at the tackle position. So yeah, I think from that standpoint, and it looks like that was a good pick for them. Two of the guys that have a lot of intrigue about, and the first one, you being a U Sport quarterback, obviously have a lot of interest in, and the NFL has some interest, obviously, as Michael O'Connor from UBC has been invited to the Seattle Seahawks mini camp. What are you seeing with Michael O'Connor? You have him going, I believe, in the third round.
Yeah, I got him going 31st overall, and he's going to be a Calgary Stampeder, and that is for the simple fact that I feel like he needs to go to the right situation in order to develop, and we all know that Andrew Buckley was a great story in this league, but this is no disrespect to Andrew Buckley, because he was a hell of a player, whether it was in U Sports like Michael O'Connor, or once he ended up getting into the CFL, he still kind of proved himself, but I was in Calgary for training camp in 2013. It was just an internship program where I was learning from Dave Dickinson, but I gained so much appreciation for the way in Calgary that they try to teach and develop and make you understand the game. And I just feel like they appreciate giving people the opportunity, regardless of passport or regardless of association with where you came from, what school you played at in terms of quarterbacks. They're as likely, I feel like, in Calgary with Dave Dickinson and his staff to bring in a guy who is from Division III as they are to bring in a Heisman Trophy winner. And I know that that's extreme opposite ends of the spectrum, but to me, if you're a good quarterback, Dave Dickinson and his staff just do not care. And I think Michael O'Connor is a really good quarterback, and that's why I think he could fall to the Stampeders at this spot. So the interesting part of this to me, Davis, is the idea of the ratio changing moving forward, and we don't know what the result's going to be on that with the current CBA that's being negotiated or otherwise, but I just feel like if you are looking at making a serious ratio change to the status quo, and if Michael O'Connor looks to be one of the better Canadian quarterback prospects in the last 10 years, you'd be silly to let him slide into the second half of the draft or even past 2025. I mean, I put him at 31. I think that might be late based on the scouting bureau and some other things that I've heard, but I just feel like if he gets anywhere 20 to 30, eventually a team's going to look at their board and be like, guys, I know he's not going to start for us right now. I know he's not going to play right now, but we got a bunch of stuff to consider here, including all things dealing with the idea of having a Canadian quarterback maybe moving forward that could be a ratio type of player for you.
We talked off air, Martian. You said the exact thing about teams looking at their board and a player falling that might not fit into a scheme, but a team looking at this guy and saying, this kid can just flat out play. I don't know where he's going to play. I don't know the projection of is he a linebacker? Is he a DB? What is his projection? But Fraser Sopik, you believe that a team has just got to draft Fraser Sopik, regardless if he's an undersized linebacker or he's a DB that maybe not be fast enough or be able to play in space. He's that dang good that you just got a team's just going to draft him and say, I got to find a way to get this guy on the field.
Yeah, I remember watching Fraser Sopik during the regular season in 2017. That's when he first kind of jumped out to me. And then we got to the Vanier Cup. They're playing in Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field against Laval, and he was everywhere, man. Like, he was shooting gaps on running plays. He was outrunning running backs to the flats when he had to release. He was, jamming people. He was trying to bull rush dudes that were three times his size. It's just, he's got that kind of warrior mentality that I love so much. He's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place in this draft because he's too small to be a linebacker. He's too slow to be a true defensive back. He doesn't really have any real man coverage skills, but who cares, man? Like, when you watch him play, it's a weird thing because, like, when I tell you that, like, if I were to write out an evaluation and say, too small linebacker, too slow to be a DB, no man coverage skills, can't play any position other than free safety, has no experience at free safety, you'd be like, wow, yeah, that guy's not even getting drafted. But then you put on film of him, and you're like, oh, God, that's like a third round, second round, maybe even talent. So that's the weird thing about him. I gave him to the Argos in my mock draft, 47th overall, for the simple reason that there was a player that was a different position, that was a tweener, like we like to say in the CFL, between defensive line and linebacker. It was Evan Foster from Manitoba a couple years back. And I remember watching him at the Combine in, I believe it was Regina, the first time we did CFL week. And I saw him playing all of these positions during the Combine. And I thought, okay, yeah, so he doesn't really fit anywhere, but he's a really damn good player. he got taken by the Argonauts because they just believed, okay, he's a good football player. We'll find a spot for him down the road. And sure enough, he's made his way onto special teams, and he's been tremendously successful alongside Nelkus Quimo at Aquinas, a linebacker who looks every bit the part of the perfect, large, long, fast linebacker. So the point being, it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what your fit is. If you're productive and if you're a good football player, they'll find somewhere for you. And I just hope Fraser Sopik goes to a team in this draft on Thursday night, TSN and RDS, that gives him a chance to make his way on special teams in the first couple of weeks of the preseason. Because I know if you put him in a CFL uniform with a CFL logo on the side of the helmet and you say, hey, go tackle that person, he's going to end up being like, you know, Terrell Davis running down on a kickoff in Japan and knocking a guy's daylights out. And they're going to be like, oh, damn, we have to play him. Like, we have to put him on our roster. So that's my hope for Fraser.
I feel the same way. He could go in the top two rounds. Now, he could go in the third round, or he could go in the sixth. He won't go in the first two, but he's good enough. His film, the first time when I saw him at the combine, we crossed paths, and I said, man, I just had to tell him. I said, man, your film, much respect, young man. That your film is nice. Like, I just had to see his film. Was, if you want to watch a football player, turn on Fraser Sopik's film. The kid can play.
Now, my thing with him is, imagine if Fraser Sopik was like 6'3", 220. We'd be losing our minds, right? Like, he'd be a first round, second round guy, that freaky, weird linebacker DB that can play anywhere on the field for you as a national. But because of his size and his speed, it's just he's that weird spot that we're talking about where we're excited as anybody else is to see where he goes.
We got to take a minute here to thank our partners at Sport Clips. Yes, that's where I go. I get to get cleaned up. I used to go a lot, but I used to have nice curly hair. Now I just have the baldy with the beard lineup. But I do go to Sport Clips. Go check it out if you want to watch sports. Get your cut and get out. They have you can go to sportclips.ca/waggle. You can redeem a coupon there for first time visitors to get a free MVP haircut. That's the whole deal. You get all the hot steam towels, the massaging shampoos. They'll take care of you over there. Go check that out. That's our sponsor. We appreciate you guys. Sport Clips, keeping us all so fresh and so clean. Anybody else that you think is going to be a surprise? When I say surprise, it could be a guy that you think is going to move up, that the scouting bureau or on draft boards, he might not have been high and he's going to jump up, or a guy that's been high and might be stepping back a bit on draft day.
The one that I find really, really interesting is Chris Osikusi, the receiver from Queens, because we fell in love with him at the combine.
He got speed to burn.
Yeah, he was so athletic and so amazing. And the thing is, a lot of the times, Davis, you know this, you have a guy who is really, really athletic, and then you hear about how he interviewed, or you hear about his grades, or you hear about how he picked up an offense, and all of a sudden everybody's kind of shaking their head and they're like, yeah, he's a burner, he's nothing else. I don't know if he'll actually be a football player for us. Chris Osikusi, everybody I talked to said he interviewed super, super well. He's got good grades. He's a Queens guy. That's not surprising. But the idea of him being able to put it all together on combine weekend, he rised a lot, I thought, in the overall rankings. Then I talked to a coach a couple weeks after the combine. They said, yeah, I think he's a developmental guy. I think if a team takes him, they're probably thinking he's a three-year project. They're going to have to work with him in order to refine his route running and his kind of route discipline and how he understands offenses. And so he should slide to the third or the fourth round. I have a really hard time believing he's going to slide to the third or the fourth round. He's got that rookie minicamp invite with the Cleveland Browns. That's an amazing opportunity for him to go show off his athleticism, and obviously they covet that. But to me, like, if you get him into camp, I just don't know how he's not going to make plays for you. I don't think he's just a 40 time. I think he's so much more than that. And so I think he might slide a little bit, but at some point somebody's going to look at their draft board and see him considerably higher up than other teams in terms of the top player available, best player available on the big board. And I think they're just going to take him. So I don't know whether he's going to be taken in the first round, which I think is a legitimate chance, or if he's going to slide into the third, or maybe even, as crazy as it sounds, the fourth round. So he's one for me to keep an eye on. Then the other one that I think is really sneaky that people might not know a lot about, because we talk so much about Matthew Betts, is his fellow defensive lineman at Laval, and that's Vincent Desjardins. And Desjardins is a really, really refined interior pass rusher. His movement's really fluid. He's got really, really strong hands. He gets as much pressure on Betts does. He just rarely gets home for the sack number, right? Like, that's right. When people look at the statistics, they're like, oh, look how many sacks Matthew Betts had. If you watch the film, I think Vincent Desjardins is right there on about three-quarters of Matthew Betts' sacks, and he's ready to pounce if and when Matthew Betts misses the quarterback, which, of course, he very rarely did. But that's somebody I think you should watch in the top two rounds that not a lot of people know about, not a lot of people care about. It's not sexy like a Curley Gittens Jr. or even a Robbie Smith as an edge guy that had a super productive third year in university. But Vincent Desjardins is going to get taken, I think, in the top two rounds, and he's going to be a really, really good player for a long time in the CFL.
Marsh, this is all going to shake out Thursday night, RDS, TSN, and where are you rocking and rolling? Because I know you're going to be tweeting and talking. What are you? What's your socials, and where do we find you on draft night?
I am going to be doing a live draft show from Tim Hortons Field with the Hamilton Tiger Cats season ticket holders because I am the play-by-play voice for them on TSN 1150 in Hamilton. So I am doing that alongside my morning co-host, Kyle Mello. We are going to be live on the fourth floor at the Canadian Football Hall of Fame hanging out. We're going to be watching the draft. We're going to be watching you, Davis, on the old TSN feed. And we're going to be enjoying the coverage and taking it in and giving analysis on there. And you can follow along if you'd like on social media anywhere. At TSN underscore Marsh is my personal account. At Marsh and Mello is where we like to have fun in the mornings here in Hamilton. And at CF Perspective is the place that I'm tossing out all sorts of different random stuff that I'm trying to pump up and get people more and more interested in the U Sports side of things, because there are a ton of great players that are going into this draft that not a lot of people have known about that they're about to fall in love with once they get to know them. And the reality is they've been playing down the street from you for 3, 4, or 5 years. And that's the thing I always laugh about in the CFL draft is people in Hamilton are like, man, I love this Mike Daly. Where did he come from? I'm like, he played at Mac. He's been down the road for 4 years. You could have watched him any given Saturday in the fall. So, but yeah, that's what we're trying to do at the CF Perspective account. So if you want to follow along there, that's kind of a home for all that fun stuff as well. But I know you're going to have some fun, man, working at the TSN headquarters and getting through all these picks with the guys, the big wigs in Toronto.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So I think we're going, 8 o'clock on TSN. We're going, we'll have 2 hours of coverage on TSN at 8 o'clock Thursday night and CFL.ca. As well, be pumping out content all night long, RDS, and then of course you as well over there, Marsh, at TSN 1130. But Marsh, thank you as usual. A ton of knowledge, been working your butt off to provide this content for everybody, for all the diehards who are following U Sports and following these NCAA kids, and you're just providing a wealth of content, and I appreciate it, and I know our listeners appreciate everything you do too, buddy. Thanks for taking some time. I know you're slammed tonight. Thanks for taking some time to join us and break down the draft. Go to CFL.ca, check out Marsh's mock draft, and that's it. We'll wrap it up. We'll be talking sometime in the next week and wrapping all these things up and what exactly happened, how these teams have changed, and what we're looking like heading into this 2019 season. For Marshall Ferguson, I'm David Sanchez, and we'll see you next week. And our man DJ Bennett will be back, and maybe he'll bring in Desmond Timothy Bennett with him. But bye for now to everyone, and see you next week.